Following are comments on Ben Jonson's Volpone, or The Fox, Act 2. Act 2, Scene 1. This Sir Paul will be ignorant of nothing. The gentleman Sir Peregrine meets a remarkable fellow Englishman, the knight Sir Politic would-be, who has quite a penchant for being in the know. In Act 2, Scene 1, an English gentleman who has only been in Venice for just under 2 months enters, conversing with the English knight Sir Politic would-be. Peregrine can hardly believe his ears when he listens to some of the nonsense that Sir Paul talks about their mutual country and Venice alike. The typical English person in Jonson's time was fond of serving up correspondences between the heavens and the earth, high and low, and so forth. It was part of that age's faith in the general coherence of things, thanks to the so-called Great Chain of Being. The concept is well covered, by the way, in Arthur O. Lovejoy's detailed book, The Great Chain of Being, and E.M.W. Tilliard's essential study, The Elizabethan World Picture. But Sir Paul takes this tendency to ridiculous lengths, and he may remind us of our own era's fascination with often dubious or even flat-out ludicrous conspiracy theories about virtually everything of note that happens. This mention of our own era may be useful to us in our thinking about Sir Politic would-be. What inspires or drives people to take up the conspiratorial mindset? It seems as if there is a strong need in human beings to be in the know, especially about things that we think are critical but that others misunderstand. Having a theory about such things may allow us to feel somewhat superior to others, to the non conoscenti, the dupes and grand innocents around us who don't understand what we think we understand. Another way to put the appeal is that conspiracy theories lend us a feeling of coherence. If we can draw together all sorts of disparate and dissonant bits of knowledge, factoids and whatnot, so that together they point us toward some brilliant, absolutely comprehensible version of events, we feel empowered. We feel happy. If we can't do that, our maddeningly complex world starts to seem distressingly incoherent to us. Well, it doesn't take the genial Peregrine long before he realizes that Paul is quite the know-it-all. Quote unquote, "This Sir Paul will be ignorant of nothing," is his quick and accurate judgment of the eccentric fellow. Act 2, Scene 1, Line 98. If Volpone's obsessions are money and sex, Sir Paul's is intelligence in the sense of information gathering and information itself. He fancies himself a foreign spy. We shall have to keep our eyes on him then. Act 2, Scene 2. They are the only knowing men of Europe. To Peregrine's astonishment, Sir Politic would-be is delighted by Scoto of Mantua, Volpone's fraudulent disguise to get Celia's attention. In Act 2, Scene 2, we are treated to a sample of just how terrible Sir Politic Woodby's judgment of other people really is, as his mania for inside information begins to collide with Volpone's quest to gain the attentions of Corvino's heavenly wife, Celia. It seems that, together with Mosca, Volpone has cooked up a crazy spectacle for the citizens of Venice. He means to attract Celia's attention by impersonating a well-known mountebank named Scoto of Mantua, who, by the way, actually visited England and performed for Queen Elizabeth I in the 1570s. See readingnorton.wordpress.com, entry dated May 15th, 2016. Sir Paul is enraptured and thoroughly convinced by the ludicrous barking of this quack, saying, quote unquote, "They are the only knowing men of Europe." Act 2, Scene 2, Line 9. As for what Volpone Scoto says about his own qualities and the virtues of his medicine, perhaps it's best to sit back and let it roll over yourself like a wave, at least initially. Quack specifics aside, reading Volpone's fraudulent pitch reminds us that nothing much has changed about the rhetoric of salesmanship in hundreds of years. There's the familiar tactic of dissing one's competitors as dishonest hacks, and conversely, distinguishing oneself as diligent, honest, or even famous. There's the matter of praising the virtues of one's product and offering it at a certain price for a limited time only. Or like late-night television ads, setting the price very high at first and then lowering it or offering three times the product for the price of one, and so forth. Operators are standing by. Or, at least in this case, Mosca and Nano are waiting to sell you Volpone's fraudulent cure-all. Volpone's act works splendidly since, after all, the whole point was to catch Celia's eye. That's why Scotto is hawking his Olio del Scotto right below her window, and he gets her to toss her handkerchief down to street level. First contact has been made, so maybe Olio del Scotto is worth something after all. Act 2, Scene 3. What, is my wife your Francesina, sir? Corvino goes into a jealous rage when he catches Celia tossing her handkerchief down to the public square to Volpone as Scotto the mountebank. In Act 2, Scene 3, Corvino drives Volpone down from his bank or raised platform and beats him from the city square. Corvino is humiliated at this turn of events and refers to himself as being cast in the commedia dell'arte role of the eminently cuckoldable character Il Pantalone, with Celia playing the rather tricky role of the servetta, or servant, Francescina, of doubtful loyalty and morals. See, for example, ItalianCarnival.com's entry on the servant character, the servetta. Sir Politic Would-Be thinks the awful scene has something to do with him, most likely because he thinks that about everything. He says to Peregrine, quote-unquote, some trick of state, believe it. I will home. Act 2, Scene 3, Line 10. Peregrine's genial way of conversing doesn't prevent him from rather meanly deciding, quote-unquote, this night I may not lose him for my mirth till night. Act 2, Scene 3, Lines 15 through 16. As the play moves on, it becomes easier and easier to see that Sir Politic's function in this satirical comedy is to be the dupe, who's always more of a dupe than even the other geeks and gulls in the play. He thinks himself mighty clever, but nearly everyone else runs circles around him. Act 2, Scene 4. I will not bid you to despair of aught. Mosca encourages Volpone to persist in his love pursuit of Celia. In Act 2, Scene 4, Volpone is more smitten than ever with Celia, and Mosca simply encourages him to keep on trying, building on the partial success gained through his mountebank disguise. Mosca says, quote-unquote, I will not bid you to despair of aught within a human compass. Act 2, Scene 4, Lines 18 through 19. Volpone's so-called parasite seems more and more to be in control of events, at least where his master is concerned. Act 2, Scene 5. Thy restraint before was liberty. Corvino expresses groundless rage at Celia for what he considers her reckless disloyalty to him. In Act 2, Scene 5, Corvino issues a diatribe to make the angels weep against his long-suffering wife, Celia. The entire scene is filled with references to whoredom and prostitution, and all Celia can do is endure the onslaught. Corvino's insecurity shows plainly, quote-unquote, death of mine honor with the city's fool, he asks histrionically. Act 2, Scene 5, Line 1. He threatens Celia with, quote-unquote, the murder of father, mother, brother, all thy race. Act 2, Scene 5, Lines 27 through 28. Or, rather, he threatens to threaten her with all this, but since, as he says, Celia must not think him an Italian man, he doesn't see the point in bothering. When Celia mildly volunteers that she never goes out except to attend church services, Corvino only becomes angrier, saying, quote unquote, "Thy restraint before was liberty, to what I now decree." And the scene ends with Corvino ominously, if not convincingly, taunting her with the vile thought of killing her and performing a public autopsy on her corpse. Act 2, Scene 5, lines 48 through 49. At least the mad King Lear only threatened to have someone else, quote unquote, anatomize Regan to find the cause of her hard heart. Well, it's easy to tell that Corvino is all talk. He's giving a performance for himself and Celia, but what he says is no less ugly for that. Act 2, Scene 6. Wherefore should not I as well command my blood and my affections? Corvino's competitive spirit and complete lack of integrity spur him on to new lows where Celia is concerned. In Act 2, Scene 6, Mosca tells Corvino that his rivals have somewhat revived Volpone with Scotto's oil that they bought. But now, he continues, the only way to preserve the invalid is that, quote unquote, some young woman must be straight sought out, lusty and full of juice, to sleep by him. Act 2, Scene 6, line 34. When Corvino hears that Lupo the doctor has offered up his own daughter for the purpose, he springs into thoroughly amoral action. Quote unquote, wherefore should not I as well command my blood and my affections as this dull doctor? Act 2, Scene 6, lines 70 through 72. After all, he reasons, how is there any more or less honor in serving up one's wife as one's daughter? Corvino clearly understands nothing of honor and is driven by the spirit of competition, just like almost everyone else in Jonson's Venice. Act 2, Scene 7. It shall appear how far I am free from jealousy or fear. Corvino decides that it would be entirely acceptable to prostitute his wife, Celia, to get Volpone's gold. In Act 2, Scene 7, we see Corvino doing that thing that trolls always do, pretending he was only joking when he said all those vile things before to Celia about her being a shameless slut and prostituting herself to the crowd of leering men gathered outside. Now he plays nice and tells her to go put on her most alluring attire so they can attend a dinner at Volpone's place. There he tells the unsuspecting Celia, quote unquote, it shall appear how far I am free from jealousy or fear. Act 2, Scene 7, lines 17 through 18. Thanks for listening. This audio lecture was recorded on Wednesday, June 25th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations, I have relied on the revised Methuen New Mermaids edition of 2019.